the students of the University of Mainz under the supervision of Martin Freuder. And today she will talk about the generalization of renormalization group histories, ADS-CFT correspondence emerging from asymptotic safety. So please, Renata, you can start whenever you're ready.
Take my mask off. Thanks a lot, Alessia. And yes, good afternoon, everybody. Today I'm going to talk about possible geometrization of renormalization group histories within an asymptotic safety framework. And so the first part of my talk is going to be based on a paper which has appeared on the archive 1 year ago. And in the second part of my talk will be really something very new, which is going to appear in the archive, I think possibly next week. And it's about a derivation of an ADS-CFT correspondence, ADS or only DS-CFT correspondence emerging from asymptotic safety. So let's start with a quick brainstorming, which are my starting ingredients from which I'm going to start with. So I'm going to start with a functional renormalization group method or techniques. But here in the beginning already, I would like to say that everything I'm going to do in the future, everything what I'm going to explain you, it's based on it can be based on an arbitrary renormalization group techniques. In my examples, like the examples I'm going to show you, they are based upon this functional renormalization group flow. But yes, in principle, the only thing we need is a renormalization group which is able to renormalize gravity. And that's in fact the strength of FRG, since we have within a gravitational theory in using FRG methods, we have this kind of conjecture, which is called asymptotic safety. I know many of you are familiar with that, which is essentially conjecturing the presence of an ultraviolet fixed point for gravity, rendering in such a way gravity non-perturbatively renormalizable. So the ingredient we use in a gravitational theory in FRG is a gravitationally effective average action. So I'm going to show you which kind of classes of action I will use. But yes, essentially this action has an RG scale, associated, which is called K. And by solving the effective equation arising from this action, we have some effective scale dependent space time metric, which I'm going to call G mu nu K. So they are indeed dependent on the RG scale, associated to a given space time manifold, which I called M4. Actually, the first part of my talk, it's pretty much general. I mean, I won't specify the dimension, the dimensionality I'm going to work with. In the end, when I will test my result on asymptotic safety, I need to specify the dimension. So our dynamical field is this space-time metric, G mu nu K, which is now the idea with which Martin and me we had. What about considering this RG scale K as an additional coordinate, or as a reparametrization of an additional coordinate? That would be like to geometrize, to embed the four-dimensional metric into a fifth-dimensional one. So we have the G mu nu K, which is d-dimensional or four-dimensional, and we would like to embed this in a fifth-dimensional metric, to which is associated a d plus one metric. It would be like to find a single foliated manifold. The leaves of whose foliation are describing the space-time, the d-dimensional space-time, at a given value of the RG parameters k. So in fact, in the literature, this kind of embedding procedure is called, it's giving rise to a scale space time. So you might be wondering already now that there is a lot of freedom in doing that, right? Since embedding a four-dimensional metric into a fifth one, we can fix some elements of the fifth dimensional metrics, but there are some elements of the metric which are still free. So the question was how to fix this other additional components of GIJ D plus one. Okay, since we are physicists, we would like to to see whether there is some physical principle or some, yeah, mathematical principle, but really we are mainly interested in some, yeah, physical counterpart, in such a way that this, in such a way we can find and determine the missing ingredients of such an embedding. Like if we would like to write our question in an equation, it's like, yeah, we have the trajectories of a 4D geometries, which have been given by our RG flow. We would like to find a unique fifth dimensional geometry, which describes exactly these trajectories in 4D, which, at a given RG scale, which is this missing ingredient in the middle. Okay, let's see how to go from trajectories of the RG flow to metric of higher space-time dimensions. We're going to start with our RG tool, in my case, with my functional RG, and by solving the scale-dependent effective field equations, which in case of pure gravity are just the effective Ansel's equation, we are left with a family of space-time metric associated with a given RG scale K. These metrics, they are related to a Riemannian structure, which all describe the same manifold, MD. Now, we can interpret the trajectory as a mapping between the RG scale K to this given effective space-time metric associated to this manifold. As a second step, we are gonna reinterpret the RG parameter K as the additional coordinate, in our embedding, we are gonna use a function of K, tau of K, reminiscent of an RG time, together with the XI. Yeah, I see that.
So is the claim that there is a single five-dimensional metric geometry and a single particular slice number, such that the four-dimensional slices of it are what?
What are the
four dimensional? So is each a solution to Einstein equations?
You mean whether we have some exactly. That's what we are going to investigate, whether there is some property in such a way that we are, and which is the physical meaning of those properties fixing a unique fifth dimensional embedding.
Assuming that each slice of the four dimensional
is
the solution of the Einstein equation.
Solves the Einstein equation in four dimensions, exactly.
And what if you take a solution like that and you make the parameters a function? The slicing. So you make the cosmological constant function of the slicing. There still is a five-dimensional metric.
Okay. You mean
the cosmological constant will be a parameter of K.
Yeah, in my effective Einstein's equation in four dimensions, that's what I'm going to do. The cosmological constant is running with K.
Okay.
It is running with K, yes. I will show that later. But that will be a key ingredient, the running of the cosmological constant.
Since we interrupted, there is also a question on Zoom by Hank. Hank, can you?
Yeah. So, I'm just wondering if along the RG flow, are you fixing the torsion to be zero all the way?
If I'm taking space-time metric to be torsion, yeah. Torsion is zero. Yes. I'm taking the metric. I mean, yeah, torsion is fixed to be zero.
Okay. I ask because there are topological anomalies that are associated to non-trivial torsion, which, you know, you can actually combine like the numbers into a higher dimensional. So what I mean is that the Euler density in 5D you integrate that, you get the Pontryagin number in 5D, and you can actually decompose it into the 4D Pontryagin number plus the Nguyen number. So
I see. Yeah,
which means that like your RG flow can actually change the topology of your 4D slices, which is kind of weird, but
There will be some trajectory which might be giving rise of a topology change, but that's something pathological. I'm going to show you. In principle, this should not be happening. Yeah.
Okay. Sounds good. Thank you.
Thanks for the question. So, which kind of foliation I'm gonna choose for my D+1 metric? So it's like an ADM form within an ADM formalism. We have the time interval d tau square. So here the time will really depend on the RG scale k, which is multiplied by the lapse function, and pi by epsilon, which is a constant which determines the signature of my fifth dimensional spacetime. On top of that, we also have the four dimension, like the d dimensional part, which is like g mu nu d multiplying dx mu plus the shift vector multiplying the tau. So in such a formalism, in such a setting, the original manifold is isometrically embedded in a D+1, in a higher dimensional manifold, in a k-dependent way through tau of k. And our D+1 manifold is equipped with a natural foliation. In this way, the RG trajectory is described by a single Riemannian structure, which is embedded in a which is like a which has D+1 dimensions. So how to make contact now between this line element here and the RG flow? You see, here we have this G mu nu D. So the natural thing to do, the first thing to do, is to identify this D dimensional part of the metric with the effective spacetime metric we get from the RG flow, so with G mu nu K, where K is evaluated at K of tau. So everything we need, everything we are gonna take from the RG flow is nothing else than G mu nu K and K of tau. You can imagine that these two pieces, that these two things have been like furnished from every RG scheme, from every RG techniques. In my case, I'm gonna use FRG. What is left? What is missing is, of course, the lapse, the shift, and the sign of epsilon, so the signature. These elements, these like these missing parts, they are not. They have, yeah. We oh, sorry. The RG flow is not giving them. It's not furnished them to us, and so again. Sorry, it is connecting. So these were the elements which were missing. And here I have to do a very important remark, and it's about the fact that these three elements, like the shift, the lapse, and epsilon, they cannot be kept free or as open, like arbitrary parameter, since we already exploited the diffeomorphism invariance of the higher dimensional manifold by solving the k-dependent effective field equations. So in fact, these three elements and mu and the sign of epsilon have to be fixed. Okay, now also to answering Liz's question, I'm going to go a bit to specify a given example in order to show you what I mean by an effective spacetime metric from the RG flow. And in particular, I am going to focus on the Einstein-Hilbert truncation in pure quantum gravity. So our effective average rejection has this form. We have the Ricci scalar, the k-dependent, so the RG scale-dependent cosmological constant, and also the k-dependent Newton's gravitational constant. What we know is that effective solution, so solution of this the equation of motion which arise from this effective action are of rescaling type. What I mean is that the whole k dependence reside in the conformal factor. Indeed, the effective field equation take this form. So we have that the Ricci tensor is proportional to the Dirac delta time a k-dependent cosmological constant. And indeed, the only input from the RG equation for our embedding is the k-dependence of the running cosmological constant lambda. In particular, I'm going to consider both positive and negative cosmological constant depending on the sign of sigma here. So I'm going to write lambda as a absolute value times sigma. Yeah, please, Lynn.
Maybe let's start with the three-dimensional metric.
Sure.
An extrinsic curvature that satisfies the constraint. Some value of the cosmological constant. Then that's defined on a three-dimensional compact surface.
Okay.
And you can continue that in two directions. The direction of increasing k.
Yeah.
And the direction of increasing n or lattice to make a four-dimensional manifold that satisfies the constraint.
Yeah.
Does the element for fixed slice but varying k also satisfy the constraint?
Like in dimension d plus one in the.
I've lost track of what d and d plus one are.
Yeah.
You start with three-dimensional initial.
Yes, time. This is clear.
And you keep the time slicing fixed. And you evolve in the normalization.
Mm-hmm.
Is that? And so you get a four-dimensional manifold, which is a trajectory of three-dimensional manifolds, in which the trajectory is a label by the normalization.
Okay, I think this depends on the action and on the. You mean in pure Einstein gravity? That depends on the trajectory which are furnished from the RG flow from that given action, right?
Right, but it's defined with that four-dimensional manifold.
Yeah.
The
Einstein's equation as well. That I don't know. Maybe there will be some special foliation able to do that. I mean, what I'm going to show that in five dimension, this is indeed possible. That I mean, to find a fifth dimensional metric satisfying, the answer, or where the metric in five dimensions is going to satisfy the answer equation. Yes, that's a good question. So, for that kind of effective action, which we saw before, and solution to this effective field equation can be always written in such a form. So if we find as a solution, a space-time metric satisfying the effective field equation for a reference scale, which I'm going to call R. So G mu nu R is nothing else than G mu nu K evaluated at K equal at a reference scale. Then we are able to find the solution, the effective space-time metric for every RG scale, just multiplying by this conformal factor YK to the power minus one, which is nothing else than the quotient between the k-dependent cosmological constant and the cosmological constant evaluated at this reference metric. This is indeed also the same quotient in terms of Hubble constant. Inserting that in our ADM formalism, we find that the d-dimensional part of the of our space-time line element is nothing else than a reference space-time metric times this conformal factor evaluated at k of tau. And this is indeed what the RG can furnish us. Now I'm gonna do some further assumptions in order to be more concrete. And I'm going to choose a vanishing lattice function. So n mu is equal to zero, and I'm going to choose a vanishing shift. Function and going to choose a lattice which is only dependent on k via tau, so it's not dependent on the other coordinates. Our line element reduces to this form, so we still have an open epsilon. We have n of tau squared, so the lattice, and this part is the one which we solved now for this kind of running scaling metric. It's going to have this simple form. Y of fk to the power minus one, so this relation, this quotient between the two cosmological constants and the reference solution. Okay, what is now a single manifold? Is there a single manifold MD plus one capable of doing what was not able to do the RG flow in order to fix this additional free parameters? I can go back to
what you've done here is you started with a metric, space-time metric, and you made a conformal transformation, an arbitrary conformal transformation on the geometry. So this doesn't have anything to do with renormalization. There's no dynamics, you haven't summed over fluctuation.
I mean, this is the speciality of this of space-time, effective space-time arising as solutions of this effective equation, which is indeed dynamics. Here, G mu nu is dynamical. The G mu nu, which is here, this is a dynamical element. And indeed, for this special class of very simple effective action, it is indeed remarkable that all the solutions are related only via this conformal factor. But this is not a conformal transformation. It is something different. But G mu nu is indeed dynamical. And depends via k only via this y of k to the minus one, where this is instead fixed. And we are going to choose some specific form of this. Let's try to make some guesses about the properties which our manifold, D plus one manifold, should have, and let's see which are the physical consequences on our space-time. So, for example, we can postulate that if the cosmological constant lambda of k, the running cosmological constant, is a strictly increasing function, so monotonically increasing, then the higher dimensional metric can be chosen to be Ricci flat. So the Ricci tensor is zero. Postulate number two, even stronger, if on top of that, so lambda strictly increasing function of k, g mu nu of k is also maximally symmetric, then the d plus one metric can be chosen to be Riemann flat, or what we usually call really flat, a flat spacetime. Let's see how does this work. In order to show you how these two postulates are related also to the RG scale, I'm gonna go to rewrite our line element in a more convenient way. So how to do that? I'm introducing a Hubble length, which is nothing else as 1 over the Hubble constant. It is k dependent, so it is running. I'm going to introduce an RG time, psi, which is equal as to the Hubble length evaluated of k of psi. So why is this equation red? This equation is red because here we are going to use the fact that lambda of k is monotonically increasing, so it's a monotonic function. Otherwise, this equation is not solvable. In such a way, if we introduce this RG time, we can write this conformal factor, which was in the line element before, through a bunch of identities, which are very easy, as a reference Hubble constant times psi squared. That's what I was mentioning before, that the monotonicity of lambda here is indeed crucial. And by making the last assumption about the Laplace function, taking the simplest form as possible, so really just to be one, then we are left with this line element in D plus one dimension. So I will lead you through this. We have still epsilon open. We have here we had d tau squared, but now we were able to write it in terms of the RG time. And the conformal factor, through also this transformation, this which was possible by the monotonicity of lambda, is reduced to multiplying the reference metric by psi squared and the Hubble constant squared.
Can this be generalized to the case where lambda is not monotonic? Because, I mean, if g and lambda have a critical, complex conjugate critical exponents as one typically finds, this might not be true.
Yeah, this is what this is a very, very good question. Thanks, Alessia. So I'm going to show you later some numerical results where we tested the monotonicity of lambda along some RG trajectories. But in principle, you're right. And by the way, for this simple like effective action, it is monotonic lambda. Instead, the product of G of lambda is not. I will show you some plots about that. But in general, of course, this is not, I mean, this is something which has to be tested a posteriori after solving the RG equation. If it is not, then what we were thinking with Martin is maybe we can like divide our flow in some sectors and take, I don't know, maybe lambda has a minimum or a maximum, and then study the RG flow up to a given scale until which lambda is monotonic, increasing or decreasing. Yes, but this is indeed a very important question, and also which is the meaning of this monotonicity at all, right? Why lambda should be monotonic? So probably that's related to a mode counting. Also, when you think about lambda as a like the usual QFT computation of lambda, summing over the all vacuum fluctuations of the fields, right? Is a mode counting of the fields. So the fact that it should be monotonically increasing, it's not. I mean, it has some physical meaning probably, but of course, not all effective action might furnish us with a monotonic increasing cosmological constant. So this is the line element we have up to now. I will write some equivalent forms of this line element. For example, if we introduce the conformal time, this is another form of that. In terms of the IR cutoff, K, this is another reparametrization. These are all coordinate transformation which are allowed. But the form I'm going to use up to now, on which I will compute the Ricci tensor and the Ricci scalar and the Riemann tensor, is the last line. So we have really a conformal factor, which is omega squared of gamma, which is multiplying this epsilon d gamma squared plus this four-dimensional part. So let's go back to our postulates. We have this line element, which we saw, yeah, which now we can connect to our RG parameter. And we can, we can compute the Ricci tensor. Okay, I won't go, this is only just differential geometry and the Riemann tensor. And what we see, that if we set all the elements of the Ricci tensor to zero, then we have to choose, first result, we have to choose epsilon, so the signature, to be the same as the sine of lambda, which was called sigma. And second, the conformal factor might take this form. If on top of that, we demand that the Riemann tensor is strictly zero, then we arrive for the four-dimensional metric. So I'm going to make that clearer. These Latin letters, they are five-dimensional, d plus one-dimensional. Instead, the Greek letters, they are deep-dimensional. So if we demand that the Ricci tensor is, the Riemann tensor is zero, then the Riemann tensor in d dimension, so in four dimension in our case, will have this form, which is exactly the form of a maximally symmetric spacetime. What does it mean? It means that the inclusion of the scale variable, of an additional scale variable, which is related to the RG scale, has in some sense flattened the curved spacetime. For example, if we started with a reference metric with a spherical manifold, so the omega squared is a sphere, and we have, so the cosmological constant, it has a positive curvature, so the cosmological constant is positive, and we might to choose here the signature to be one, to be positive, then by imposing strict flatness of the fifth dimensional metric, we arrive at this line element, which is nothing else as the spherical slicing of R d plus one. If instead we started with a negative curvature for the d-dimensional spacetime, which would be an hyperbolic spacetime, we have to choose here, because of this relation, a negative signature, ending up with a hyperbolic slicing of Minkowski spacetime. So it turns out that the inclusion of this scale variable has flattened the curved spacetime. Now we are able to solve our puzzle, right? We started from this from this question, from this equation with this missing ingredient. And now we know that it will start with a four-dimensional Einstein space, and we add the requirement that lambda is a monotonic function, then there is a unique Ricci flat five-dimensional embedding. If we start from a maximally symmetric spacetime and we add monotonicity of lambda, then there is a unique Riemann flat or Strix flat five-dimensional metric. Now let's go to physics. This was a bunch of math. Let's go to physics. And yes, the results I'm going to show you, they are based on FRG computations and asymptotic safety conjecture. So this is the flow diagram and of our trajectories in a G lambda diagram. So this is the dimensionless Newton's gravitational constant and the dimensionless cosmological constant. We see that we have two fixed points. An ultraviolet fixed point when k is going to infinity and running towards k going to zero. We have two different kinds of trajectories. One, the type one trajectory, which goes to negative cosmological constant. So indeed, sigma is plus one for k, which are larger than L to the minus one. L is essentially L to the minus one is related to this scale, and is minus one when k goes to zero. The type two trajectory is a very, very particular kind of trajectory because starts from the UV fixed point and goes to the non-Gaussian UV fixed point and goes to the IR Gaussian fixed point, and has sigma equal to one along its trajectory. And then there is a type 3A trajectory, which is the one flowing towards a positive cosmological constant in the IR, so for k going to zero. This kind of trajectory can be caricaturized. There are like a caricature, or at least we can like parameterize the trajectory in an analytic form in this expression. So we have that lambda of k is the product of lambda zero, so the value of lambda at k equal to zero, times these two functions. So this is the semi-classical regime for k smaller than a given value, which is typically of the order of the Planck length. And this is indeed, instead, the scaling for k larger, so in the ultraviolet fixed point regime. Here, Alessia, comes the answer to your equation. We solved the flow along this trajectory. I mean, we solved the RG flow for the effective action in the Ensemble truncation. And we saw indeed that along this trajectory, for example, along a 3A trajectory, lambda of k is indeed monotonically increasing. So this works for this kind of trajectory. This is indeed non-trivial and also not, it should not be like very easily expected, because if you think about, if we solve about for the product of G and lambda, this is instead not monotonic and increasing. And also like the anomalous dimension related to the Newton constant is not. So this has to be tested afterwards a posteriori. But in this simple example, and we know that this flow diagram is also valid for many other gravitational system and gravitational matter system, this is indeed the case. Yes, indeed. About the meaning of this monotonicity and mode counting, I already mentioned before. Yeah, this is a very intriguing open question. Yeah, I think yes. Here about the topology, the question which was asked before. So, what about the embedding of this of these trajectories, which we found here? Let's start from a type 1A. So the one where the cosmological constant changed sign. We start from a four-dimensional metric, which is which has all plus, so it's Euclidean and has this kind of signature. And we see that since epsilon of k has to be equal to sigma, making like our postulates, then the embedding acquires a minus here in the first coordinate. And this is kind of reminiscent of a chronogenesis. I mean, it's like a time is arising, right, with a negative signature. Instead, if we are in the other branch of in the upper part of the trajectory where lambda is still positive, we have the fifth dimensions. The fifth dimension always has plus sign, and so there is no topological change. But still, yeah, this is the way the embedding is realized. The same, of course, for the type 2a and the type 3a, which all have a positive cosmological constant along the wall RG flow. So yeah, this is very intriguing indeed, because what is happening along this, this 1a trajectory? This is an open question. Also, because when lambda is exactly equal to zero, there is like, yeah, there might be this change of topology, but there the equations are singular, so not really regular, and it's hard to test this. This completes my first part. I will rush because I'm running out of time. But yes, indeed, this asymptotically safe trajectory in 4D comply the postulate one with our rule and are eligible for this kind of geometrization. So now I will go to the new part. This is really something very, very new. And it's, yeah, I think it's the fun part because, of course, now the question is, what if we want to embed into Einstein's manifold and include Lorentzian signature? So remember, this was the effective Einstein's equation, which were related to our effective action. And yes, and now we want to generalize the previous procedure also to Lorentzian signature. And here the signature is very important, since what we were looking before were really were in a Euclidean setting, it was possible to perform this global embedding in this Riemann and Ricci flat spacetimes. But here, since the signature is changing, and we want to perform this global embedding, it might be paid more attention to this difference between local and global requirement. Let's see what's happening. If we impose that the Ricci tensor is of Einstein space, it is this relation, then we're able to find an expression for the cosmological constant in the plus one dimension, which takes this form. So it's proportional to this constant C. And if we want to relate that to a reference Hubble constant, we have to introduce these two integration constants. And epsilon is always related to the signature. And if on top of that, we ask that it is maximally symmetric, then we find that the D plus one Riemann tensor takes this form, which is exactly the form of a maximally symmetric spacetime. So what we have found, that for every choice of these three parameters, epsilon alpha 1 and alpha 2, and of a reference Einstein metric in D dimension, then the D plus 1 dimensional metric is maximally symmetric if and only if the reference metric in D dimension was maximally symmetric. Now, which physical principle in this case do constrain and exactly determine our higher dimensional manifold, which geometrizes our Lorentzian trajectory, our Lorentzian spacetime in D dimension? We're going to make some symmetry assumption. We are going to ask that the higher dimensional manifold should have the same amount, the maximal amount of symmetry that is consistent with the symmetry properties of the lower dimensional manifold, so of the d-dimensional manifold. And in particular, since we are dealing now with maximally symmetric spacetimes, we are going to start with a d-dimensional de Sitter background, de Sitter manifold, which is indeed the one which is compatible with our observations up to now. So the question is, D plus one dimensional manifold, in which D plus one dimensional manifold can we embed this de Sitter spacetime? And this maximally symmetric, this high dimensional manifold should also be Lorentzian and maximally symmetric. Okay, let's remind ourselves which was the line element in D plus one dimension. The first thing that we can notize is that epsilon here has to be positive and equal to one. Otherwise, we will have two times, and we won't. This is something we would not like to have. So the scale coordinate has to be spatial, this the gamma square. The surprising result here is that only two candidates arise from this geometrization, and these are anti-de Sitter or de Sitter. Anti-de Sitter is the case in which we choose alpha 1 equal 1 and alpha 2 equals 0. And indeed, we found a negative higher dimensional cosmological constant, and the conformal factor takes this form, 1 over the sinh, then hyperbolic sinus. And the other case is flipping alpha 1 and alpha 2, so alpha 1 is 0 and alpha 2 is 1. And if we find indeed here a positive cosmological constant and a conformal factor, which is takes the functional form of 1 over the hyperbolic cosine. So which kind of line metric we have in D plus 1 for the case of anti-de Sitter? We have, this is the line element we have in terms of the conformal constant, constant introduced before. If we now perform a coordinate transformation and we go back to our RG time, which we called xi in the beginning, this is a well-behaved, this is a diffeomorphism transformation, so this is regular. And we end up with an anti-de Sitter space-time with this lime element, xi squared plus an hyperbolic sinus squared of xi times the d-dimensional de Sitter. And this lime element is what is usually called in the literature de Sitter-sliced anti-de Sitter space-time. The de Sitter embedding instead, we had here 1 over cosine squared. We perform a coordinate transformation. Here we have to take care about take only the principal values of a trigonometric function. I will show this to you later what this means. And we end up with this line element, which has the RG time plus the sine squared of xi, which is multiplying the d-dimensional de Sitter. This space-time element is in the literature is called de Sitter sliced de Sitter. Now we are able to relate this foliation we studied to the RG scale, to the RG flow. How do we do that? We saw that by taking the RG time to be zero, so only the d-dimensional part of the metric can be written as the de Sitter slicing times the function of xi squared, which in case of anti-de Sitter was an hyperbolic sinus, and in the case of de Sitter was a sinus. And we might, what we want to do in order to relate it with the RG scale is to identify this function with this conformal factor coming from the RG flow. What it turns out that this gives rise to a regular coordinate transformation, which is in some sense reminiscent from what we did before in the Vichy flat case. There we only had xi is equal to this variable, so to the Hubble length, and here instead we have a function of xi. But this is indeed regular. Here, just as a side note, what I meant by the de Sitter slicing of the d-dimensional manifold is really the global coordinate of the de Sitter. So, which is the form this lambda k takes along the RG trajectories? It depends on the sign of lambda. If lambda is equal to zero, lambda zero is equal to zero, then yk is a decreasing function and it goes to infinity for k goes to zero. If lambda zero is positive instead, it has a maximum value at k equal to zero, which I'm going to call y. So let's start from the ADS5 candidate. So now the dimension is indeed important because these trajectories are realized in the RG in four dimension. Now we are going to approach really the ADS CFT correspondence. This is the coordinate transformation we would like to do. And this is exactly what is called in mathematical framework an orientating reversing diffeomorphism. Everything is regular. We have to distinguish between the two cases of lambda 0 equal to 0, lambda 0 larger than 0, because of these two different behavior of the conformal factor. What is going to affect this is this domain of the transformation K of psi. And yes, let's see whether we can really make contact with a conformal field theory. What we do, so conformal coordinates, global conformal coordinates of anti de Sitter, they have this form. This is the Penrose diagram, where tau goes to infinity and psi goes to pi half. If we perform a coordinate transformation, so from this psi coordinate, psi and time coordinate to this tau and psi, what we see is that we can cover this shaded gray area of the Penrose diagram of anti de Sitter. And if we draw the lines of constant time, we find this dotted line. Instead, if we draw the line of constant psi coordinate, we see we can draw this continuous line here. You see that when psi goes to zero, we approach the triangle B1 A B2, which is indeed the Lie cone of anti de Sitter. Instead, when and psi equal to zero means that k goes to infinity. So this is the UV limit of the theory, of the RG flow, of the four-dimensional theory. Instead, when psi goes to infinity, k is going to zero, and we are approaching this time-like boundary of the Sitter at space-time infinity. Here, okay, this correspondence, we have to distinguish still between the two different trajectories, 3a and 2a. I'm not considering the 1a because of the signature change in the flow of lambda. So the 3a, they have a maximum value of lambda 0, so we never reach this boundary. Instead, for a 2a, so for really this trajectory, which goes from the non-Gaussian fixed point in the UV to the Gaussian fixed point in the IR, we are able to explore the whole anti de Sitter embedding up to k equals zero, which really reaches this vertical line. We are indeed deriving an ADS CFT correspondence in our embedding conjecture. So let's see whether all the properties of the ADS correspondence are there. We see that when k goes to infinity, we approach this B1, A, B2 lines, where the dynamics is determined by the bare action. When k goes to infinity, the effective action is proportional to the bare action. When k goes to zero, instead, we are reaching this vertical line, which is B1, B2. Here, instead, our effective the dynamic might be dominated by the effective action. And so we are describing, in fact, a theory of gravity which lives on the bulk of an ADS 5 and is holographically related here to a conformal field theory on the boundary. This analogy is perfect, provided that the 2A trajectory, remember, this is only possible for the 2A trajectory, otherwise the 3A only reaches a maximal value. Provided this trajectory is conformal, which has not been yet proven, even if there are some indications, and that the limit of the effective action and the limit for k going to zero of the effective action, average action is the action of a four-dimensional conformal field theory. It is very nice to think about the holographic principle, which is related to this kind of correspondence, and it is also very natural the way it arises in a FRG framework, since all actions which are related to a given RG scale K, even when K goes to infinity, so for a bare action, they can be reconstructed from the ordinary effective action when K equal to zero. So the effective action which live on this boundary. And this is really this represents an initial value problem when the direction of the K evolution is changed from downward to upward. And yes, and the initial condition is imposed not in the UV but in the IR. I think okay, there is also the DS5 candidate. I don't know, Alessia, how much time do I have? Okay, I will be very, very quick. So we saw that there are only two candidates to embed the trajectory in a maximally symmetric Lorentzian spacetime in five dimension. The other one is the sitter. I am gonna choose this kind of conformal coordinates for the sitter, where the Penrose diagram, the area of the Penrose diagram, which is covered by this coordinate, is this square, the shaded square. If we draw the lines of constant time and constant psi, then yeah, we find this this kind of word line of geodesics. And actually, if by performing the coordinate transformation from this RG scale conformal factor, in the end we find that we have to choose only the principal value of the trigonometric function, so we only cover a half of the whole square. And we have here to distinguish between the case of lambda zero larger than the reference cosmological constant and the case when they are equal. In the first case, we only cover one part, only this shaded area of the Penrose diagram. In the second case, we cover the whole area. But what's the difference now with the ADS case? There's indeed a difference, since here, this line, which is always the k equal to zero limit, is not a boundary of the sitter, right? Because the sitter, you can you should imagine that it continues also here. So yeah, this is indeed a difference with the ADS case. But the nice phenomenon which is arising here, it's the fact that at B1 and B2 all the trajectories meet. Also, if I show you this diagram, you should see also the trajectories for psi going to zero, which are this one, which are the one really describing the triangle. Psi goes to zero means k goes to infinity. And it seems really that at this point, all the functionals, gamma k, have the same importance, and all the fluctuations, the gravitational fluctuations and the matter fluctuations, have the same importance, which is really the definition of a critical phenomenon at a fixed point. Yes, so all the points on the Penrose diagram are describing three spheres. And yeah, this is really what in the literature, by Streminger, he was he's like the main author of this inventor of this correspondence. This is really what in the literature is defined as the DS, the Sitter CFT correspondence, the fact that at a space-like boundary, at time-like infinity, so in these two points, there is a three-dimensional CFT which obtains the effective average traction by evaluating it at the early and late time regime. Okay, I'm now finishing, concluding. We were able to derive various forms of de Sitter and anti-de Sitter CFT correspondence as specific solution in non-perturbatively renormalized quantum minds and gravity. And of course, there are still some technical open questions, and I'm also open to suggestions from your side, whether the CFT, where there is a CFT at a fixed point in asymptotic safety, this is still an open question. Even if I would like to recommend you a very nice paper by Hinterbichler, where he's showing that linearized gravity around Minkowski with an effective action of square root of GR is indeed conformal invariant at the IR fixed point. This is a very recent paper, last month. Then there is a reconstruction problem in along FRG. I know Alessia is an expert on that. And many generalizations of this can be done. For example, if we consider different truncations in our effective action, we started only from Einstein-Hilbert truncation, we can consider higher ordering curvature and also adding matter. We know that the flow diagram might differ, might be similar, but probably it would be possible to derive some asymptotically as ADS or DS embedding. And of course, another very, very interesting question is to go the other way around, like to add some boundary terms to our RG and see whether the four-dimensional theory, the related four-dimensional theory, does indeed provide an asymptotic safety theory of gravity. Yeah, that was it.
Okay, other questions? So here on Zoom, first from students. Okay, I start. I have written down like three questions. So one is more like on the motivational side. So what do I gain geometrizing the normalization group flow in the light of, from the asymptotic safety side, aside from creating like a connection with the holographic principle, theorem, and all that?
Thanks, Alessa, for the question. The first, our first motivation was really, trying to make connection with ADS, CFT, formalism, and also dictionary. But of course, by analyzing this kind of geometrization, it really turns out that there is some physical properties which are related to this geometrization. The monotonicity of lambda is one of them, but also, we live in a four-dimensional space, but maybe there is a fifth dimensional we cannot measure. But how is this holographic principle working? So asymptotic safety is a very, very nice tool, and it's providing us really a non-perturbative theory of gravity. But how can we make how can we make contact with, for example, an holographic principle in a higher dimension? These are questions which asymptotic safety may not provide unless we do not play with these geometrizations.
Okay. Before I go ahead, my question is to Mark.
Yeah. Sure.
So it actually follows up on the question that Alessia had before, and what you just answered. So there's monotonicity of lambda. I'm actually still confused. So the lambda that you say is monotonic, how does it relate to the lambda in the lambda G plot? Because, in this lambda G plot that you showed, they were clearly like spirals. So
okay, this is a
different truncation that you used? Or?
This is a very interesting question. We the spirals in the view in the UV, we were neglecting them. By taking this caricature trajectory, we are in some sense like taking only the flow of lambda without taking into account the spirals. I think there is a paper by Martin where he's deriving this approximate caricature trajectory, and he shows how to analytically get rid of those spirals.
Okay, so you basically start in the infrared and follow towards the UV until it's not monotonic anymore, in a sense?
You mean really when we solve this? When we were checking from the monotonicity of lambda?
Yes.
This one, right?
Yeah.
This is lambda of k, but wait, this is lambda of k. The spirals are in the lambda of g plane. You see the difference?
So isn't it just that this is the dimension for lambda?
This is of course, it's also related to that. Yes, 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 it is also related to that. I'm sorry, yes. Thanks, Benjamin.
So, and the math. It's monotonic, it's the dimension for
Yes, this is the dimension four. Yes, of course. Yeah, I'm sorry.
All right.
I saw a question. No, sorry. Yeah, Joanna, please.
Could you, in principle, apply this now to your 5D space time to get into a 6D metric? Can you iterate it?
That's a nice question. That's a very nice question. I mean, we should study asymptotic safe in five dimension, which is I don't know whether there is this kind of, I don't know exactly which is the flow diagram of a fifth dimensional gravitational effective action, whether there is a fixed point or not. I'm not sure. But in principle, if this is possible, then yes, that is an iterative procedure. What we thought actually is to start from three dimensions. It would be super nice to start from three dimensions, because then you really, if you, for example, take the 1A trajectory, then you will really like find this kind of chronogenesis at a given point, at a given scale. But in three dimensions, we know that, there is no fixed point.
But do you see a way or somehow to get from, because now you're doing the step from D to D plus one.
Yeah.
Do you see a way to go from D to D plus two?
Yes, in a generic D-dimensional setting, yes, you're right. But this, what I'm doing here, I mean, this formula, this is specific for four dimension. And I get it by solving the flow equations only in four dimension. We have to study which are the trajectory in five dimension. But yes, I mean, as an idea of like to go higher and higher dimension. Of course, it would be nice to think about that. But I mean, really, what I'm saying here, the first part was really general in the dimension. But when I'm introducing the trajectories, then I have to specify that I am in four dimensions.
But I think also the conclusion is that she wants to, and Martin wants to have only one dimension, because from a certain dimensional manifold, they don't know what you want to have is only one dimension that is associated with K.
Yes.
Or other coordinates that you want to have, I guess.
Yeah, at that time you can do only one, of course. But I think Joanna was mentioning maybe if you add one, then you can renormalize your fifth and go higher and higher. But yes.
I think in different approaches, for example, string theory or, I don't know, area metrics, it might be interesting to have a larger step between the dimensions because, for example, what you can describe by a length metric in 4D, maybe you can describe by a length metric in 6D. So it might somehow be interesting to do a step of two.
I don't know. Yeah, but it's true that the RG...
The point is that the additional dimension
is from K.
Is it the momentum space? If you want that, it is also related to a question they want to ask. Like,
thanks, Jan.
So the four dimension or three dimension are in coordinate space, where the additional dimension is in momentum space. So in what sense it is a coordinate?
This is a good question. And that's the reason why we were doing all this coordinate reparametrization and transformation. You remember, we introduced tau of k and then xi, which is really
the additional coordinate, and then you parameterize it
starting from this. Yeah, of course, it's always dangerous to talk about momentum in a curved space-time. But yes, this is the idea why we were using all these reparametrizations and transformations.
When you looked at the embedding, like in the second part of your problem,
yes,
swapping into ADS,
yeah,
I think at some point you made a statement that the CFT should be at k equals zero.
Yeah,
and then I got confused because usually we say the fixed point, like the UE fixed point, is potentially a CFT and not, and certainly the effective action is not a CFT, right? Because we have not
born. Yeah.
So can you? What's going on here?
So sure.
Exactly, the opposite limited than
yes
expected, to be honest.
Sure, I'm trying to refollow a bit the steps. And in fact, in the beginning, we were also very surprised, Benny. I remember with Martin was like, we are making something wrong. There should be the other way around. But indeed, if you think about that, this is quite natural. So again. equal to infinity, we find this, like our geodesics, they approach this this triangle, which is the light cone of ADS. Instead, k going to zero is really this line where the CFT lives. The question is, what does it, and then, yeah, I mean, then the holographic principle is like the other way around that is usually is in the normal, in the normal way we are used to think. And, but you're right, you don't know whether we live in a CFT or not, right? This is something which is still open, but yeah.
No, what I'm saying is we are not conformal because, I mean, we do have scales. I'm of the scale of like 1 meter.
Okay.
So that I'm not conformal.
Yes. Yes. I see what you mean. I'm thinking about this paper of Hinterbichler. Are we not conformal? But we do live at k equal to zero.
Yes.
Yeah, this is something I have to think about. Yeah, thanks for the question.
We have a question on Zoom, Hank.
Yep, thank you for the very interesting talk. I also have a question regarding this ADS CFT stuff. So you're essentially, let's say k goes to zero is like the IR limit or whatever, then You're saying that the effective bulk action sort of flows to the CFT on the boundary. So then,
I mean,
at every step in the RG flow for any finite K, let's say, you still have CFT on the boundary though, right?
Right. Like going high, making K larger.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I mean, this is like, this is the correspondence, right? It the CFT is still on the boundary, then you can describe your dynamics in the bulk.
Exactly.
But still, yeah.
Exactly. So my question is, like, maybe this is not right, but you mentioned that for certain flows, there's some topology change. Maybe you can see that also at the boundary as well, right? Maybe there's some singularity happening in the boundary.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the reason I mentioned this is because, like, I think there's some like mathematical study of deformation, like deformation theory of CFT that you can use to kind of like classify these kinds of singularities.
I see. I'm trying to think whether, because here I didn't mention this 1A trajectories, which are indeed the one where this topology change might arise. But that situation there is also mathematically a bit more involved since you don't have the freedom to perform this reparametrization in a regular way. So I don't know. One could think about studying the two different cases in one direction of K and in the other one, up to the scale when lambda is exactly equal to zero and when the topological change is happening. But yeah, that's of course something more, a particular case, I would say, of this correspondence. Yeah, I don't know. That could be a realization of what you have in mind, of course. Mm-hmm. And then yes, still at k equals zero, you will have like this correspondence. Then I don't know how to study that because here I'm starting from conformal representations of space times which have a definite curve, a sign of the curvature, and instead, by changing topology, I would like to glue two different, I don't know. I mean, about the singularities and CFTs, that sounds interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting, but thank you.
No, thank you for the question.
Any questions?
Many.
I would have two more questions. So, so this scale K is not really a physical momentum scale, right? So, have you thought about looking at the actual gamma and then setting this whole thing up with a physical momentum scale? And this is way more complicated.
Yeah, sure.
What you want to do in the end to get a more physical interpretation of this momentum scale?
Yeah, this is some. This will be very interesting extension. We will have to go to momentum space in ADS, like in five dimension, then, and try to relate that to that. Yes. No, thanks for the suggestion. That will be a nice investigation direction.
Yeah, and the second question that I had was this whole setup is it crucially depends on that you actually only study the space times, right? So as soon as I include higher order terms, those manifolds will not be solutions. So we have thought about generalization, and then you get more couplings, and solutions are
complicated. That's a question which we have asked ourselves, and that's the reason why now I'm going into the literature asymptotically ADS spacetime and DS spacetime, because probably via these additional free parameters which arise from higher derivative terms or matter couplings, for instance, then we might be able to recover, for example, ADS in a limit. But of course, this won't be realized in such an exact way as we had here, because we are strongly relying on this assumption of a maximally symmetric spacetime. But yeah, I have the feeling, I mean, it's a work in progress, that via this, the sitter and asymptotically the sitter and asymptotically the sitter spacetime, this might be doable.
But even then, if you only restrict it to the asymptotics, but you would still need that ADS would be a solution at that scale, right? And that sounds unlikely.
Yeah, you should probably, you should make the assumption that at a given scale you can neglect some interactions or some matter couplings, which is, of course, non-trivial. Yeah.
Actually, in general, you won't have that.
Yeah.
I mean, just forgetting about matter, once you have a higher derivative, you don't have a Ricci flat solutions anymore.
Yeah. No, that I know. The sitter is more a solution of that. Yes. That's something which is super important to investigate to make that more general. Yeah. Thanks for the questions.
Okay.
There are no other questions.
Okay, so in this case, we can thank again Renaud for the nice talk and discussion.